We see in Leviticus 23 where God tells us to count seven Sabbaths. And after that seventh Sabbath, the 50th day would be the Feast of Pentecost. Brethren, this is the sixth Sabbath in the count to Pentecost this year. This year, the seventh Sabbath is next Saturday. Next Sabbath is the seventh Sabbath. The day after next Sabbath is Sunday, May 28th, and that's going to be the Feast of Pentecost, or the day of Pentecost this year. Pentecost is the only festival that we must count in order to know the day. We'll read and look at scriptures in Leviticus 23, where God tells us the exact day for all the other festivals. There's no question when it is. He expects us to be there. It's a sacred assembly. He wants us to assemble together before him. But on the Feast of Pentecost, he expects us to count in order to know the day. God instructs us to count from the wave sheaf offering that's within the days of unleavened bread, that day one begins then. And we count seven Sabbaths, or 50 days, that day after that seventh Sabbath. We are instructed to count in order to know when Pentecost is. Most years, counting the days to determine when to keep Pentecost is very simple. And we know, if you've been around the Church of God for very long, there's times when, even every year, that some of our brethren that we've been with keep it on different days. Or on certain years, especially when the first day of unleavened bread is on a Sunday and the last day of unleavened bread is on a Saturday, they get hung up on which day after the Sabbath does the count begin. So we have friends that keep Pentecost on different times of the year, especially during some of those complicated years when the first day is on a Sunday. Today, I would like to focus our attention on the counting of Pentecost. Pentecost is going to be here very quickly. We will look at an example within the Bible to give us an answer regarding when the wave sheaf offering is to occur, especially on those complicated years when the first day of unleavened bread is on a Sunday. Do we begin counting on the first day of unleavened bread, or do we count after the last day of unleavened bread, which is on a Saturday, and to begin counting outside of the days of unleavened bread? There's a scripture in the Bible makes it extremely clear. Why people have issues, I don't know. Going through this year has refreshed my memory on this. And us as human beings, we tend to forget. We tend to forget certain scriptures and things to make things clear. Mr. Foster has asked many of us to pick some of the topics of what CAGWA has put out as what do we believe. And this is one of those topics with the counting of Pentecost. So he's wanting us to do this, and I plan to do this today. If you'd like a title, the title is simply The Counting of Pentecost. The Counting of Pentecost. Let's first begin by turning back to Leviticus 23, where we read God's instructions. We see in Leviticus 23, all the festivals are mentioned. He gives us appointments. He gives us a time in which he expects us, through a command, that we are to come together before him. And let's look at this, and we first need to review God's instructions here, and I'd like to begin back with Passover in the days of unleavened bread and move forward. Let's begin here in Leviticus 23, and let's just read here in verse 4. It says, "These are the feasts of the Lord, holy convocations." These are sacred assemblies. These are appointments, if you want to look at it, that God has set with us that you are to attend. All of us are to assemble together before God. These are the feasts of the eternal, holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at their appointed times. Verse 5. On the 14th day of the first month, this is the first month of the Hebrew calendar, on the 14th day of the first month at twilight is the eternal's Passover. So very clearly, we know when Passover is. It's on the 14th day of the first month of the Hebrew calendar. Verse 6, on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Eternal. So we know the first day of Unleavened Bread is on the 15th day. God makes that extremely clear. It's the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Eternal. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation, a sacred assembly to come together. You shall do no customary work on it, but you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Eternal for 7 days. The seventh day shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. And we know when the seventh day of unleavened bread, because it's 7 days after the 15th. But then we come to the Feast of Pentecost, which begins in verse 9, that I'm going to skip at this point. But let's go down to verse 23, where God talks about the next festival after Pentecost, which is the Feast of Trumpets. Verse 23, he says, "Then the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall have a Sabbath rest, a memorial, blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation." Once again, we see very clearly God sets the specific day, the first day of the seventh month of the Hebrew calendar. Makes it, there's no question. Then in verse 26, when he starts talking about the Day of Atonement, verse 27 says, "Also, the 10th day of this seventh month shall be the Day of Atonement." Once again, very specific, God tells us. Then down to the Feast of Tabernacles, beginning in verse 33, "Then the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of the seventh month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles." And we know the 8 days from there is the last great day, or the eighth day. So we see here from all of these descriptions of all the festivals except for Pentecost, God specifically tells us the exact day that he expects us to come together before him on a very special service. But then we look at verse 9. This is where the Feast of Pentecost is discussed. Let's read through all of the explanation that God handed down to Moses, and he expected Moses to hand down to the ancient Israelites, and that's the information that we have today. Verse 9, "And the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, and say to them," so it's coming from God through Moses to the ancient Israelites, it says, "when you come into the land which I give to you." Let's stop here. So this instruction that we're about to read does not have anything to do with the ancient Israelites until they cross the Jordan and enter the Promised Land. Let's take note of this. It says, "when you come into the land which I give to you," that's the Promised Land, "and reap its harvest." We're going to read some scriptures. When they came into the Promised Land, there was already a harvest there. They didn't plant it. They didn't do anything with it. When they came into the Promised Land, there was a harvest there, ready to be harvested. So he says, "when you come into the land which I give to you and you reap its harvest, then you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. So there was a small amount that was to be taken out of the field, and it was to be prepared. Many believe that a sheaf was a dry measure, an omer, that it was handed to the priest. Verse 11, he, the priest, shall wave the sheaf before the Eternal. There was a ceremony. There was an offering made to God that the priest did where he waved the sheaf, or he elevated this dry measure in some manner toward God. Many gets into the detail of how this was elevated and the direction and so forth. But the important thing is here to keep in mind, this was an offering that God instructed the ancient Israelites to do on the first day of the count to Pentecost. It was a wave sheaf offering, or a wave sheaf ceremony that was to be done. Verse 11, the priest shall wave or elevate this sheaf or this omer before the Eternal. It was offered to God to be accepted on your behalf. The priest was offering it before God to be accepted on the people's behalf. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. Now take note of this statement, the day after the Sabbath. This is where all confusion comes in with the count of Pentecost. Which Sabbath? What Sabbath is being discussed here? What day after which Sabbath? Or does it matter a Sabbath? Or is he simply talking about the day after Saturday, which is Sabbath, which is simply Sunday? We will get into that a little bit later. But this priest was to wave or to elevate this offering before God on the people's behalf on the day after the Sabbath. The priest shall wave it or elevate it before God. And you shall offer on that day, when you wave the sheaf, a male lamb of the first year without blemish as a burnt offering to the Lord. So there was other things that were to be offered along with this sheaf or this dry measure that was to be elevated. Verse 13, its grain offering shall be 2/10 of an ephah, a fine flour mixed with oil, an offering made by fire to the Eternal for a sweet aroma. And its drink offering shall be of wine, 1/4 of a hin. You shall eat neither bread, this is very important, another very important part of the puzzle here to conclude how to count to Pentecost. Verse 14, You shall eat neither bread, nor parched grain, nor fresh grain, until the same day that you have brought an offering to your God. So God makes it extremely clear here that these people, the ancient Israelites, were not to take any grain out of the field to make bread. They weren't to take grain out to roast it, is what parched grain means. It's a grain cooked by dry roasting. Or they weren't to take fresh grain out of the field until the wave sheaf ceremony or the wave sheaf offering was delivered to God. They weren't to touch the harvest. Other than that wave sheaf coming out, that small amount to be made into that dry measure to be presented at the wave sheaf offering, they weren't to eat it in any manner. They weren't to bring any of it out of the field until the wave sheaf offering was presented to God. That's very important for us to remember and to understand here. It shall be a statue forever throughout your generations in all your dwellings. Why do we still do it today? It says it's to be done as a statue forever throughout your generations in all your dwellings. We're still doing this today. Verse 15, another key in this deciding of when Pentecost will be and how the count is. Verse 15, and you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath. Okay, once again, this statement, the day after the Sabbath. That's where confusion comes into play, where people want to say this Sabbath is the first day of unleavened bread. Some want to say it's the Sabbath within the days of unleavened bread, and so forth. They're keying off this Sabbath. But the instruction is, you shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7 Sabbaths shall be completed. Count 50 days to the day after the 7th Sabbath. Okay, let's stop here for a second. I'm not a very smart man. I'll tell you that right now. But when you're counting 7 Sabbaths, there's only 1 Sabbath every week. And you're counting weekly Sabbaths here. It says the 7th Sabbath is day 49. Because the day after the 7th Sabbath, here it says, you will count the 50th day. So if the 7th Sabbath is 49 days, you step back. The first week, the wave sheaf offering must be on a Sunday in order for the first Sabbath to be day 7. The 2nd Sabbath, day 14. 3rd Sabbath, day 21, and so forth, till you get to the 7th Sabbath, day 49. So we see from these scriptures the wave sheaf offering must be presented to God on a Sunday. It says, count 50 days to the day after the 7th Sabbath. He says here to count the Sabbaths. 7 Sabbaths shall be completed. Verse 16, count 50 days to the day after the 7th Sabbath. Then you shall offer a new grain offering to the Eternal. And he begins to say here, there was an offering at the wave sheaf offering on day 1, and he's about to talk about another offering that was to be given on the 50th day. Verse 17, you shall bring from your habitations 2 wave loaves, of 2/10 of an ephah. They shall be a fine flour. They shall be baked with leaven. They are the first fruits to the Eternal. And this has a lot of spiritual meaning, but that we won't be getting into today. But I want to point out, there was an offering that God expected on day 1, and then on day 50, he expected another offering. It was a 2-wave loaf offering. And there was other things to be offered with the wave loaves. Verse 18. And you shall offer with the bread 7 lambs of the first year without blemish, 1 young bull and 2 rams. They shall be as a burnt offering to the Eternal with their grain offering and their drink offerings and an offering made by fire for a sweet aroma to the Eternal. Then you shall sacrifice 1 kid of the goats as a sin offering, 2 male lambs of the first year as a sacrifice of peace offerings. Then in verse 20, the priest shall wave them or elevate them with the bread of the first fruits as a wave offering before the Eternal with the 2 lambs. They shall be holy to the Eternal for the priest. And you shall proclaim on the same day that it is a holy convocation. This 50th day, when this wave loaf offering was to be presented by the priest, was a holy convocation. It was a sacred assembly. He expected us to come together before him as an appointment, just like he did the rest of the festivals when he set an exact day. You shall do no customary work on it. It shall be a statue forever in all your dwellings, throughout your generations. So that was a lot of reading in Leviticus 23. But this is the instruction that we are given for the determination of when Pentecost and how Pentecost is to be kept. Which day? we are to count. After God reminds Israel about Passover, when it is, about the days of unleavened bread, when it begins, God added the instructions that would only apply after the nation crossed the Jordan and entered the promised land, when that harvest would be waiting for them. So to summarize, important things here. Verse 10 is when it wasn't meant for them until they entered the promised land. Verse 11 was very important, where he said this wave sheaf offering was to be presented before God on the day after the Sabbath. The priest shall wave it. Verse 14, they weren't to touch any of the harvest until that wave sheaf offering was presented to God. And then the count instruction here in verse 15 and 16, where they were to count seven Sabbaths. And after that seventh Sabbath, the next day was day 50, it says very clearly there in verses 15 and 16. So we see here where God gives us specific instructions. There are a few ways to interpret the phrase, the day after the Sabbath. Some interpretations are different than what we believe. It is widely accepted that this phrase has a connection to the days of unleavened bread described in verses 6 through 8. And we're going to read an example where the wave sheaf offering was given on the first day of unleavened bread. It was during the days of unleavened bread. It wasn't outside of the days of unleavened bread. We must determine what Sabbath or what this meaning is when it says the day after the Sabbath. So we need to determine what this Sabbath is that's being discussed here. It's very important. It's where confusion comes in. It's where there's other interpretations of this situation. So let's look at the three main different interpretations for the day after the Sabbath. There may be more. There may be quite a few more. I don't know. But there's three main interpretations of what this day after the Sabbath means. The first one, which we do not believe. The first two, we do not believe. I'll just say that up front so I can be very clear here. So the first interpretation, many in the Jewish community consider this to be a reference to the day after the annual Sabbath, or the day after the first day of unleavened bread. So if that's the case, then it would be on the 16th day of the first month. It would be on a specific day of the Hebrew calendar every single year. There would be no need to count. We as the church do not agree with this interpretation because it would lead to Pentecost to always being on that fixed day of a Hebrew calendar. It would always be on the 16th day of the first month is when that wave sheaf offering would be offered. This interpretation would eliminate the need for the instruction to count, to calculate Pentecost each year. So we as the church do not believe that interpretation is correct. The second interpretation, or some of the main interpretations of the day after the Sabbath, this being the second one, indicates that the weekly Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread is the key to determining of the wave sheaf offering, meaning that in a seven-day week, there's only one Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread. There's only 7 days. There's only going to be one Sabbath day. This second interpretation is saying the Sabbath, the weekly Sabbath, has to be within the days of unleavened bread. Then you begin your count the day after it. Okay, this interpretation's focus is on the Sabbath, focusing on what Sabbath is during the days of unleavened bread. Most years, that wouldn't yield any difference with how we interpret the phrase, But when the first day of unleavened bread is on a Sunday, then it would. If identifying the weekly Sabbath, if you focus that it has to be within the days of unleavened bread and that's your focus, then in a year when the days of unleavened bread are from Sunday to Saturday, the wave sheaf offering would be taking place on the day after the seventh day of the feast, after the days of unleavened bread are complete. And we will read a scripture where they gave the wave sheaf offering on the first day of unleavened bread. So if that's the case, the ancient Israelites and Joshua disobeyed God's instructions. And we're going to take a look at that. Because of the biblical evidence that we have, we do not believe this is accurate understanding of the instruction for calculating Pentecost. We don't think looking at keying off that the weekly Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread, then you pick the next day after it. We don't agree with that. The third interpretation that makes it very clear, it's in line with all the scriptures that we're going to be reading. The phrase, the day after the Sabbath, is simply a reference to the first day of the week. The day after the Sabbath, we know the Sabbath is on Saturday. The day after the Sabbath, or the day after Saturday, is Sunday. We know that it is the Sunday that is occurring within the days of unleavened bread is the focus that we need to have. It's what Sunday is on, is during that days of unleavened bread, and we go from there. That's when the wave sheaf offering would be given on day one. To make it simple, it would be the only Sunday that is within the days of unleavened bread. That would be day one. That would be when the wave sheaf offering was presented before God. We believe this to be the most accurate interpretation based on the biblical accounts. Now, just as a reminder, let's read again. We're still in Leviticus 23. Let's read verse 14 again, because this becomes very important when we move forward here. It says, "You, the Israelites, shall eat neither bread, nor parched grain, nor fresh grain, until the same day that you have brought an offering to your God." So they weren't able to eat of the harvest until the wave sheaf offering was presented to God. Let's keep this in mind as we move forward here. Every few years, 2025 is going to be the next year when this occurs, when the first day of unleavened bread falls on a Sunday. Some people will be keeping, they won't start their count till the day after the last day of unleavened bread. They're going to be a week later. This always leads to questions when to start counting the 50 days to Pentecost. God's instruction says, "You shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day that you brought the wave sheaf offering." When the first day of unleavened bread falls on a Sunday, the question arises as to whether the day of the wave sheaf would fall on the first day of unleavened bread. Is this what God expects? Is it wrong to do this on a holy day, on a sacred assembly day that God sets? It is really a question of understanding the correct application of the phrase, the day after the Sabbath, that we've been discussing. So keeping this instruction in mind, we can read from the Bible approximately 40 years later to the first Passover season after Israel entered the Promised Land. Remember, this instruction did not matter until they crossed the Jordan and entered the Promised Land. Well, let's go forward now when they entered the Promised Land and see what is said there. Israel crossed the Jordan River and entered the land on the 10th day of the first month, 4 days before Passover. There was already going to be a harvest in the field, and they weren't to touch that harvest until the wave sheaf offering was presented to God. So let's go to Joshua chapter 4. We know Moses throughout the chapter or throughout the all of Deuteronomy, Moses reminded the ancient Israelites of all the instructions from God, and he reminded them of all that they were to do. Moses wasn't allowed to go into the promised land. Joshua was used to bring the Israelites across the Jordan into the promised land. So let's begin reading in chapter 4 in verse 19. It says, "Now the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and they camped at Gilgal on the east border of Jericho." Here they entered on the 10th day of the first month. Keep in mind, Passover will be on the 14th day, 4 days later, and the first day of unleavened bread would be on the 15th. So when they crossed the Jordan, within a week, all of this was going to occur. So let's continue in Joshua 5. We will see what first occurred after crossing the Jordan. I want to read here through the first 9 verses. This doesn't have anything to do with the count, but I want you to understand what they did after they crossed the Jordan with their time schedule. Joshua 5, beginning in verse 1. It says, "So it was when all the kings of the Amorites who were on the west side of the Jordan, and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea, heard that the Eternal had dried up the waters of the Jordan from before the children of Israel until we had crossed over, that their heart, the king's heart, melted, and there was no spirit in them any longer because of the children of Israel. At that time, the Eternal said to Joshua, 'Make flint knives for yourselves and circumcise the sons of Israel again the second time.'" So Joshua made flint knives for himself and circumcised the sons of Israel at the hill of foreskins. And this is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All the people who came out of Egypt, who were males, all the men of war, had died in the wilderness on the way after they had come out of Egypt. For all the people who came out had been circumcised. Starting out, after they left Egypt, they were circumcised. But all the people who were born in the wilderness, on the way as they came out of Egypt, had not been circumcised. For the children of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness till all the people who were men of war who came out of Egypt were consumed. They died. All of those that were circumcised, they weren't allowed to enter the promised land. They died because they did not obey the voice of the Eternal, to whom the Eternal swore that he would not show them the land which the Eternal had sworn to their fathers that he would give us, a land flowing with milk and honey. So Joshua circumcised their sons, whom he raised up in their place, for they were circumcised because they had not been circumcised on the way." So we see what was occurring between the 10th day and Passover, the 14th day. "So it was," verse 8, "when they had finished circumcising all the people, that they stayed in their places in the camp till they were healed." They stayed put. The surgery wasn't going to be easy for them to just be moving around. They were staying put, it says, while they healed. Verse 9, "Then the Eternal said to Joshua, 'This day I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. Therefore, the name of the place is called Gilgal to this day.'" So we see the first thing that occurred after the people crossed the Jordan. was those who had been born during the wandering in the wilderness, during that 40 years, they had to be circumcised. So the Israelites was encamped at Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day. Then let's continue to see the biblical account of the wave sheaf offering being presented to God on the first day of unleavened bread. Let's read here in Joshua 5, beginning on verse 10. It says, "So the children of Israel camped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month at twilight on the plains of Jericho. They obeyed the instruction of Leviticus 23 that was delivered to them." Verse 11. Catch this, very clear here. "And they ate of the produce of the land on the day after the Passover, unleavened bread and parched grain on the very same day." On the first day of unleavened bread, the ancient Israelites was eating of that harvest. Remember the instruction back in Leviticus 23. They weren't allowed to eat of the harvest until the wave sheaf offering was presented before God. The wave sheaf offering had to be presented on the first day of unleavened bread in order for them to go into the harvest to reap wheat or barley, most likely barley at that time, to prepare for food. It says, verse 11, "They ate of the produce of the land in the promised land on the day after the Passover, unleavened bread and parched grain on the very same day. Now the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten the produce of the land." A miracle occurred. If you remember way back when God began to give them manna to eat, that's what they ate during the 40 years in the wilderness. But after this day, the first day of unleavened bread, the manna stopped. It ceased on the day after they had eaten the produce of the land. "And the children of Israel no longer had manna, but they ate the food of the land of Canaan that year." The children of Israel kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month as God instructed. On the day after the Passover, which was on the 15th day, which is the first day of unleavened bread, they ate of the produce of the land, including parched grain. They dry roasted it. They cooked it. Remember back in Leviticus 23:14, it said they could not eat until after the wave sheaf had been offered. Did the ancient Israelites disobey God's instructions? Did Joshua disobey God's instructions? It's possible, right? Putting the pieces together from the Bible, we conclude in Joshua 5 that the first day of unleavened bread fell on a Sunday, the day after the Sabbath. It had to be on a Sunday in order for the seventh Sabbath to be day 49. The first day of unleavened bread this year had to fall on a Sunday. They didn't keep it on the day after the last day of unleavened bread, as interpretation number two was. They counted. Since they were eating of the parched grain on the first day of unleavened bread, we conclude that the wave sheaf offering must have been offered early on the first day of unleavened bread in order for them to be able to go into the field on the first day of unleavened bread and gather food for themselves to eat. Some have asked whether it was appropriate to have the wave sheaf on the first day of unleavened bread since it was associated with the beginning of the harvest. Would that be breaking God's Sabbath or that sacred assembly on the first day of unleavened bread? There's no biblical instruction against offerings being presented to God on a holy day. In fact, and we will read here shortly, every holy day had special offerings that God commanded them to prepare And it was way more work on the holy days, on the festivals, than a normal work day. We're going to read that. Let's go to Numbers chapter 28. I think it's important. We're going to take some time here to go through some of the offerings that God expected the ancient Israelites to present before him. Here we're going to read that there were more offerings on the first day of unleavened bread than normal work days on the daily sacrifices. Let's read here in Numbers 28. And let's begin reading here in verse 1. It says, "Now the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying," so it is God telling Moses what he expects. Verse 2, "You command the children of Israel and say to them, my offering, my food for my offerings, made by fire as a sweet aroma to me, you shall be careful to offer to me at their appointed time." Same way as God expected us to assemble together on those festivals, he gave them instructions, specific instructions on what to offer on every given Sabbath and every given festival and every day of their life as far as that goes. "And you shall say," verse 3, "to them, this is the offering made by fire, which you shall offer to the Eternal, two male lambs in their first year without blemish, day by day as a regular burnt offering." So these were daily sacrifices that God commanded them. Two lambs were to be presented. Very light work compared to what God expected on the first day of unleavened bread that we will read here in a second. Verse 4, "The one lamb you shall offer in the morning, the other lamb you shall offer in the evening, one-tenth of an ephah, fine flour, a grain offering," and so forth. But we see here two male lambs and some other peripheral things to be presented daily. Then we come to the Sabbath on verse 9, where he instructs two lambs of their first year without blemish and two-tenths of an ephah of fine flour and so forth. He expected on the Sabbath day that this offering was to be presented to God. Then in verse 11, monthly offerings. At the beginning of the month, it says, "At the beginning of your month, you shall present a burnt offering to the Lamb or to the Lord, two young bulls, one ram, and seven lambs in their first year without blemish." So many more animals, much more work to be done at the beginning of a month. Then down to verse 16, it says, "On the 14th day of the first month is the Passover of the Eternal." Then this is what we're wanting to key on here in verse 17. Is it okay? Would it be okay for an offering of a wayshief offering to be presented on the first day of unleavened bread on a sacred assembly? Verse 17, "And on the 15th day of this month," that be the first day of unleavened bread, "is the feast. Unleavened bread shall be eaten for 7 days. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation, a sacred assembly. You shall do no customary work, and you shall present an offering made by fire as a burnt offering to the Eternal, two young bulls, one ram, and seven lambs in their first year. Be sure they are without blemish." So we see here, God commanded more work to be offered before him on the first day of unleavened bread than he did the normal daily sacrifices when there were only two lambs. Verse 20, "Their grain offering shall be a fine flour mixed with oil. 3/10 of an ephah you shall offer for a bull, and 2/10 for a ram. You shall offer 1/10 of an ephah for each of the 7 lambs. Also 1 goat as a sin offering to make atonement for you. You shall offer these besides the burnt offering of the morning, which is for a regular burnt offering. In the manner you shall offer the food of the offerings made by fire daily for 7 days as a sweet aroma to the Eternal. It shall be offered besides the regular burnt offering and its drink offering, And on the seventh day you shall have a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work. And so forth. It is clear here, there was nothing wrong with presenting offerings on the first day of unleavened bread. God commanded certain offerings to be done on every first day of unleavened bread. So would it be wrong to give a wave sheaf offering on that day? Well, we would conclude, looking here, that it would be fine because we have a biblical account when it occurred. The wave sheaf offering, which is offered on the first day of unleavened bread, right here in Joshua 5, marked the beginning of the harvest. The harvest couldn't begin until the wave sheaf offering was presented to God. All the other offerings that God instructed in Numbers 28 was also done. The harvest could begin any time after the wave sheaf had been offered. The years when the wave sheaf was offered on a holy day, the major work of the harvest would no doubt be done the next day. No doubt, the work of actual bringing that harvest out would not have happened on the first day of unleavened bread. But another point we need to cover, can food be prepared on the first day of unleavened bread? Would it be okay for the ancient Israelites to be able to go out in the field since it was the first day of unleavened bread? It was a holy convocation. No work was to be done. No customary work. Was it okay for them to go out in the field and gather grain for them to eat for their family? Let's go back to Exodus chapter 12, where we see the answer to this. Here we will read that it was okay for them to prepare food on the holy days within the days of unleavened bread. It was just for their own family. It wasn't work and just harvesting the whole field. It was okay for them to bring out enough to prepare to feed their own family, is what they did in Joshua chapter 5. Let's read in Exodus 12, and let's read here in verse 15. Exodus 12, beginning here in verse 15. It says, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. For whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. On the first day there shall be a holy convocation. And on the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation for you. No manner of work shall be done on them, but, take note of this, but, there's an exception, that which everyone must eat, that only may be prepared by you. It was okay for them to prepare food for their own family to eat. So we see in Joshua 5 that we feel that was the first day of unleavened bread. It was okay for them to offer the wave sheaf offering on that day. It was okay for them to gather enough grain out of the field to prepare for food that day. And God stopped the manna the day after. God's presence was there. God gave permission to prepare food for your family on the first day of unleavened bread. The biblical reason why we do not accept the second interpretation is this. The second interpretation of the day after the Sabbath, when the wave sheaf was after the last days of unleavened bread. If you remember, the second interpretation keys and focuses on that the Sabbath had to be within the days of unleavened bread. Well, if the first day of unleavened bread is on a Sunday, there's only one Sabbath that week. It's the last day of unleavened bread. And if they key off that day being in the days of unleavened bread, the first day of the first day after, which would have had the wave sheaf offering presented, the ancient Israelites and Joshua would have disobeyed God in Joshua chapter 5. Because They were able to eat on the first day of unleavened bread. The wave sheaf offering would have already had to be presented. So did they disobey God? Or were they following God's instructions? The Israelites were eating on the first day of unleavened bread. They would have ignored Moses' instructions about this. Let's go to Joshua chapter 11, where we're going to see that Joshua and the ancient Israelites followed all that Moses commanded. They followed the instructions, which shows us that Joshua chapter 5 is correct, where the wave sheaf offering was presented on a Sunday, the first day of unleavened bread. It was a Sunday within the days of unleavened bread. They didn't do it outside of or after the last day of unleavened bread. Let's read here in Joshua 11, verse 15, to make it very clear. As the Eternal had commanded Moses, his servant, so Moses commanded Joshua. And so Joshua did. He left nothing undone of all that the Eternal had commanded Moses. He followed all of the instructions that Moses gave him, that God gave to Moses. We see that this second interpretation could not be correct because it would have been a week later. For summary of counting to Pentecost, what did the church decide on the three interpretations of the day after the Sabbath? The church has concluded that the first interpretation could not be correct because it didn't require counting each year as God instructed. If you would to follow after the first day of unleavened bread, first day of unleavened bread can fall on a Tuesday. If they started counting on a Wednesday, how could you make the Sabbath the 49th day or the seventh day? It can't happen. The church has also concluded that the second interpretation could not be correct because the Israelites would have disobeyed God's instructions of eating the harvest before the wave sheaf offering was presented on the account in Joshua chapter 5 that we have read today. The church has concluded the third interpretation to be correct, that the day after the Sabbath is simply a reference to the first day of the week. The day after the Sabbath, the day after Saturday, is Sunday. It fits. It's the first day of the week on a Sunday when the wave sheaf offering was given. The 49th day would be on a Sabbath. The day after that 49th day was 50, after the seventh Sabbath. Brethren, here we are on the sixth Sabbath. There's only one more Sabbath next week, and the day after that, which is on a Sunday, is the day of Pentecost. To make it simple, it would be only the Sunday within the days of unleavened bread. That's our key, is when the wave sheaf offering was to begin. You can go back this year, the day after, or that Sunday during the days of unleavened bread would be day one. You could start counting your Sabbaths. This is the sixth Sabbath, day 42. The seventh Sabbath is day 49, and Leviticus said the day after the seventh Sabbath was 50th. We believe this to be the most accurate interpretation based on the Bible accounts, where everything fits together. The next example of the first day of unleavened bread being on a Sunday will be 2025. I think the last time it was 2021. Pentecost is the only festival that we must count in order to know the day of the day to keep. God instructs us to count from the wave sheaf offering during the days of unleavened bread. We are instructed to count seven Sabbaths. Then the day after the seventh Sabbath is Pentecost. Pentecost has to be on a Sunday. The day after the seventh Sabbath is a Sunday. Has to be on a Sunday. The counting of Pentecost was important to God. I'm interested to know why he's putting us through this count. It's going to be interesting to see all of the fine details that this shows us. Hopefully this has helped to clarify the counting of Pentecost and also the confusion on those years when the first day of unleavened bread is on a Sunday.